The title of this Shabbos HaGadol Drasha is The Holiday of Pesach, a celebration of freedom or a warning against the dangers of freedom. What does freedom mean to us? Or what should it mean to us? Unfortunately for some, freedom entails harm to others. Consider the popular slogan, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." While many around the world rally behind this notion of freedom for Palestinians, it translates into the destruction of the Jewish state. We cannot endorse the freedom of one group if it entails the destruction of another. When contemplating a desirable form of freedom, we often reflect on historical events such as the American Revolution, which is frequently likened to the story of the Exodus. In a letter to his beloved Abigail on May 17, 1776, John Adams mused about the parallels between the plight of Israel and America, likening the actions of Pharaoh to those of King George. Adams seemed to contemplate his own Moses-like role in America's quest for freedom, pondering, "Is it not a saying of Moses, 'Who am I that I should go in and out before this great people?'" Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson even proposed featuring the Exodus story on the United States seal. During George Washington's eulogy, Pastor Eli Forbes likened him to the biblical figure of Moses, calling him the Washington of Israel. Similarly, when we think about an acceptable form of freedom, we often turn to the civil rights movement, which also draws parallels to the Exodus story. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. found inspiration in the Exodus narrative, seeing it as a call for both physical and spiritual liberation. In a sermon, he remarked, "The cry of 'Let my people go' is more than a plea for deliverance from physical slavery. It is a call to the eternal freedom of the children of God." President Barack Obama also referenced the Exodus story during a speech in Jerusalem on March 21, 2013, highlighting its enduring significance to African Americans and their struggle for liberty and dignity. Indeed, the Exodus story symbolizes freedom, much like the American Revolution and the Civil Rights Movement. Yet, what we commemorate during Pesach is not merely the celebration of freedom or an ancient civil rights movement. Indeed, it serves as a cautionary tale about the complexities and perils of freedom. It all boils down to the difference between the mitzvah of matzah and the prohibition of chametz, the mitzvah to eat matzah and the prohibition to eat chametz during Pesach. On the surface, when you read through the psukim in the Torah, there seems to be a seven-day obligation to eat matzah and not to eat chametz. Indeed, the halacha tells us that chametz is forbidden for 7 days of Pesach. But the Gemara in Psachim, Daf Kuf Chaf Amud Aleph, tells us that that's not true. The Gemara says, Tanya Kavase de Rava, there's a brisa that supports Rava's position, that the Torah says in Parshas Re'eh, Sheshes Yomim Tochal Olav Matzos, Uviyom HaShvi Atzeres L'Hashem Elokecha. For 6 days you should eat matzah, and the seventh day is Atzeres, no work, which indicates on the seventh day there is no work, but there's no matzah. Only 6 days we should eat matzah, but not the seventh. And says the Gemara, Mashvi Rishus Av Sheshes Yomim Rishus. And based on a biblical methodological principle, which is beyond the scope of this drasha, the Gemara says that just like the seventh day, matzah is an option. Also, the first 6 days, matzah is an option. Ah, yachol af laila rishon of rishus. I might think that even the first night, there's only an option to eat matzah. There's no obligation to eat matzah. Tam lomar al matzah umorom yochluhu. No, the Torah says in Parshas Bo that you have to eat matzah and moror on a Torah level obligation. Ainli ela bizman shebeis hamikdash kayam. Maybe this only applies when there's a beis hamikdash standing. Bizman, because then we're bringing the korban pesach and you're eating the matzah moror together with the korban pesach. Bizman shein beis hamikdash kayam. Minayin, how do you know when there's no beis hamikdash that there still is an obligation to eat matzah? Tam lomar says the Torah in Parshas Bo also be'erf tochlu matzos. Hakasuv kavucho. There's an obligation to eat matzah on the first night, on Seder night. What emerges from this Gemara is that the only matzah obligation is Seder night. So what that means is that when you go on your Chol HaMoed trips and pack lunch, what is lunch? Matzah and, well, I guess matzah and cream cheese or matzah and American cheese. I seem to recall when I was younger, I had matzah with jelly and cream cheese together, and I think that I liked it. I think that I detested it throughout the year, but for some reason on Pesach, I like the matzah with the jelly and the cream cheese. I think it's like the same thing with macaroons. I hate them throughout the year, but I love them for some reason on Pesach. But I digress. On all those Chol HaMoed trips, when I'm eating the matzah with the cream cheese and the jelly, the Gemara tells me that I do not fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. I only fulfill the mitzvah of matzah on Seder night. And indeed, most Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Tuf in Or Chaim, Siman Tuf Ayin Hei Siv Zayin writes, Ein Chiyuv Achilos Matzah Ela Belayla Rishon Bilvad. The only obligation for matzah is Seder night. The rest of, on all days other than the Seder night, all Pesach days, it's only a reshus, only an option to eat matzah. And if that's the case, I find it somewhat strange the Torah juxtaposes the prohibition to eat chametz with the obligation to eat matzah for 7 days. So many times throughout the Torah, it says 7 days, eat matzah, and 7 days, don't eat chametz. The Torah tells us, eat matzah for 7 days, but not really. When the Torah is telling us to eat matzah, it's really telling us don't eat chametz. It's a little challenging, and perhaps this is why the Vilna Gaon famously holds that while you're not obligated to eat matzah other than Seder night, if you do eat matzah during Chol HaMoed with the cream cheese and the jelly, you do fulfill a mitzvah, but there's no obligation to do so. That's his lashon. It's called, he says, it's a mitzvah but not a chova. According to the Vilna Gaon, what is this mitzvah that we are fulfilling? Well, Rav Yitzchak ben Abba Mari of Marseille, France, wrote a work called The Itur, where he deals with the following question. He says the following. On Sukkot, we're only obligated to eat in the Sukkah on the first two nights of Sukkot. We're not obligated to eat in the Sukkah at any other time during that holiday. Similarly, on Pesach, we are only obligated to eat matzah on Seder nights. We're not obligated to eat matzah on the other days of Pesach. And yet, we recite a bracha every time we eat a bread meal in the Sukkah on Sukkot, but not every time we eat matzah on Pesach. Why is that? And he answers the following. He says that by sukkahs, ki boy lamecha besukkah, when someone wants to eat in the sukkah, ika alav mitzvahs asay devesukkahs teshuvah, even though you're not obligated to eat meals in the sukkah, you're not allowed to eat bread meals outside the sukkah, but you're not positively obligated to eat bread meals in the sukkah. Nevertheless, whenever you eat in the sukkah, you're fulfilling a mitzvahs asay, a positive mitzvah of basukkahs teshuvah, of living in the sukkah. Of agabi matzah, however, when it comes to matzah, ki boy lamecha leka alav mitzvahs asay de matzah. When he comes to eat matzah, he's not fulfilling the positive mitzvah of matzah during the other days of Pesach. El alav debabal tochal chametz. Rather, when you eat matzah, you're not fulfilling a mitzvah of matzah. You're only fulfilling what? There's only a fulfillment of rejecting chametz. You only, when you eat matzah, it's the lav of bal tochal chametz. You are fulfilling the lav, the prohibition of not eating chametz. You don't make a bracha on this lav, on this prohibition. Now, this is a fundamental difference between the obligation of matzah and the prohibition of chametz on Pesach. We are only obligated to eat matzah on Seder night, and we are forbidden to eat chametz on all 7 days. And even if you hold that eating matzah constitutes some kind of mitzvah fulfillment, it is only a fulfillment insofar as it is a rejection of chametz. When I eat matzah on Pesach, I am rejecting chametz, and that's why there's no bracha on matzah during Pesach. But why is this so? Why is matzah only a Seder night obligation and chametz is a 7 day prohibition? So let's start with matzah. Why do we eat matzah? On one level, eating matzah is a part of what we are trying to accomplish on Seder night. We're trying to fulfill the mitzvah of Chayev Adam Liros Etz Atzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yatzah Mimitzrayim. We are trying to relive the experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Exodus. At the beginning of the Magid section of the Haggadah, we referred to the matzah as Halach Ma'anya Di Achalu of Asana Ba'ar de Mitzrayim, poor man's bread that our ancestors ate in Egypt. And at the end of the Magid section, we say that the reason why we eat matzah is that we ate it as we left Egypt. In other words, the goal of eating matzah on Seder night is to relive the defining moment of our national birth. Every year, we relive this experience, and eating matzah is part of that experience. What does matzah signify? When we left Egypt, we were commanded to eat all the food b'chipazon, in haste, in a rush. And matzah specifically is a food that we eat when we're in a rush. We don't have time to bake bread. Even though we knew that we weren't leaving Egypt until the next morning, we still needed to eat the matzah on the night of our redemption. After all, when we become a nation, we need to act with haste, with passion, with excitement, with a sense of urgency, and with inspiration. This is the obligation of matzah during the holiday of Pesach. The obligation of matzah is about reliving Yetzias Mitzrayim and about jump-starting our commitment to become God's nation with passion and a sense of urgency. And that's why the Torah obligation of matzah is for one night only. Because after we passionately commit to the mission of the Exodus, to follow God and to become His nation, we have a different task during the rest of this holiday. After all, most of the holiday is not about matzah. It's about no chametz. Most of the holiday is a time to reflect on no chametz, whatever that means. What does chametz stand for? And why is the holiday of Pesach really a holiday of no chametz lasting for 7 full days and not just one night? What is chametz all about? There are 4 theories about what chametz represents. I will share, there are many different theories actually about what chametz represents, and I will share with you 4 common theories. The first theory is that chametz represents the Yetzer Hara. The Radvaz writes this in one of his tshuvos, in Chelek Gimel, Siman, Tav Kuf Mem Vav, and he explains that we are so strict. He says that it represents the Yetzer Hara, and that's why he says we're so strict with chametz that we must burn it and nullify it and search for it in the holes and the cracks in our houses. And even the smallest amount of chametz, even a mashahu, is forbidden. On Pesach, we must eradicate any amount of chametz because it represents the Yetzer Hara. He calls it the Seor Shebeisa, the yeast in the dough. And what the Radvaz is referring to is a Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos, Daf Yud Zayin, Amud Aleph, tells us that Rabbi Alexandri, after he would daven the Shemoneh Esrei, he would say, Ribon Ho'olam, Master of the World, Galoy V'yadu L'fanecha. It's revealed and well known before you. Shiratzonein L'asot Shonecha. We want to fulfill your will. Umi Ma'akev, and what prevents us from fulfilling your will? Seor Shebeisa V'shivun Machios. The yeast in the dough and the subjugation to the kingdoms upon us. Yiratzon L'fanecha, may it be your will. She Tatzilem Yadam, you should save us from their hands. Okay. What is this Seor Shebeisa? So Rashi explains, it's Yetzer Har Shebelibenu. Ha Machmitzenu. The Seor Shebeisa, the yeast of the dough, which is our Yetzer Hara in our hearts, that's what causes us to sin. On Pesach, we have to eradicate this chametz, this Yetzer Hara, this evil inclination. In fact, the Kera Kemach for Rabbeinu Bachaye writes that often when Chazal refer to someone who turned to the dark side, it uses the lashon of hechmitz. He's spoiled. He's soured. Right? When, for example, when Koresh was first positively disposed to the Jews, so then the Gemara refers to it as kodem shehechmitz, before he soured, before he became quote-unquote chametz. Wine that becomes sour is called chometz, vinegary, but it really means that it becomes sour. Essentially, what that means is, of course, when you sour, when you're hechmitz, it means that that our Yetzer Hara overpowers our Yetzer Tov. We let our desires control our behavior. And that's why, as I mentioned, the Radvaz writes that we are so stringent with chametz. We must burn it and search for it, and we forbid even the smallest amount of chametz because it represents the Yetzer Hara, and there is no room for the Yetzer Hara on Pesach. Rav Yecheskel Landau, the Tzlach, on the Gemara and Brachos, has a slightly different perspective of what the Seor Shebeisa is. He says that it's really connected to Shibud Malchios. He says that Rav Alexandri, HaMelech Hikimu L'dayin V'shofet, the king appointed him as a judge. V'lo yelo breira livroch mi'asura, he couldn't flee from this position. V'chein Omar, and therefore he said, G'loi V'yadua, it's well known to God. Umima Akiv Shor Seor Shebeisa, the yeast of the dough. Zer Ramuz Al Hasrara V'memshala, this refers to the office and the rulership that Shegorim Gavuz Alev, that causes arrogance. K'mosha Seor Gorim Shetigba Ha'isa, what does the yeast cause? It causes the dough to rise. B'tapuch L'mala, it causes it to rise up. You can't flee. He can't leave his position of his leadership position because the government does not allow him to do so. So according to Tzlach, he connects the two positions of Sor Shev Issa and Shibud Malchios, but for our purposes, the Sor Shev Issa refers to arrogance. That's what Yi symbolizes, the arrogance. A third way to view the prohibition of Chametz is that rejection of Chametz is a rejection of Egypt and all that it stands for. I have included a brief passage from an article from Dr. Yael Ziegler points out, and I'll just read to you what she writes about this. She says about Egypt and the connection between Egypt and bread. She writes, it is not just the Nile that shapes Egypt's attitude. Bread is a dominant feature in the biblical portrayal of Egypt, an apt representation of her self-reliance and self-satisfaction. Plentiful bread is a critical source of both economic and military success, providing sufficient caloric needs for Egypt's troops. Archaeological finds illustrate the importance of bread making in Egypt. Artistic scenes and models frequently portray bakeries, while tombs often contain loaves in various shapes. It is possible that Egyptians invented the process of making bread. Certainly, they enjoyed their bread, which symbolizes their well-nourished society, content, and satiated in its rising, bloated success. According to the Bible, Egyptians take great care with their bread, imputing it with what seems to be semi-sacred status. Bereshit 43:32 explains that Egyptians do not eat bread with the Hebrews because it is an abomination to them. Earlier, Joseph's Egyptian master, Potiphar, gives him charge over everything in his household except the bread that he eats, the source of Egyptian success and the symbol of its innovativeness. Bread is an inestimable staple of Egyptian sustenance, one not easily shared with foreigners. Egypt is the archetype of a nation whose success undermines the ultimate goal of recognizing God, causing them to regard their own success as a product of their human superiority. In removing Israel from Egypt, God guides them to remove Egypt from Israel. To do so, they must construct a society that rejects the worship of their own strength and instead looks upward for the source of their success. Integrated within the narrative of Israel's departure from Egypt is a curious detail. In the rush to leave Egypt, the nation departs without leavened bread. This gives rise to a central component of the yearly commemoration of the Exodus. On Pesach, Israel abstains from eating bread for 7 days, recalling the manner in which they left bread behind in the land of Egypt. Rejecting bread is equated with rejecting Egypt, her satiation and smugness, and instead embracing exclusive reliance on God. According to Dr. Yael Ziegler, she points out that bread is a dominant feature in the biblical portrayal of Egypt. Archaeological finds illustrate the importance of bread making in Egypt. That it's possible that Egyptians invented the process of making bread. In fact, the Torah speaks about the importance of bread to Egyptian culture. The Egyptians don't eat bread with Hebrews because it's an abomination to them. And Potiphar gave charge to Yosef over everything in his household except the bread that he eats. In a sense, then, a rejection of Egypt, of Chametz, is a rejection of Egypt. And finally, a fourth approach is the Zohar. The Zohar points out that in Parshas Kitisa, the Torah juxtaposes the prohibition of idolatry with the obligation to observe the holiday of Pesach. Elohei Masecha lo taselach, and that is Chag HaMatzos Tishmor. Says the Zohar, my high legabe, what's the connection between idolatry and the celebration of Chag HaMatzos, the holiday of Pesach? Elohachi uk muha, but rather, this is established. Man da ochil chametz on Pesach, command the palach lakum ihu. That one who eats chametz on Pesach, it's as if he is worshipping idolatry. In fact, in the Haggadah Shlema of Rabbi Menachem Kasher, he suggests a number of parallels between the halachos dealing with idolatry and chametz. In both instances, we are prohibited to own them or benefit from them. Even the smallest amount of chametz or idolatry is forbidden, and we are actively obligated to destroy these things. Additionally, in Sefer Yecheskel, Perek Chaf, the Navi tells us about how leaving Egypt involves not just leaving Egypt, but Ish Shikutzei Enav Ashtichu V'gulei Mitzrayim Al Titamu Ki Ani Hashem Elokeichem. It involves leaving the idolatry of Egypt as well. So if the Chametz represents idolatry, then abstaining from Chametz for a week underscores the beginning of our transition from a world of idolatry to a world of service to God. In sum, we have four basic approaches as to what Chametz represents: Yetzer Hara, arrogance, Egyptian culture, and idolatry. Why then do we need a week of no Chametz? Why do we need a week of no food symbolizing these values? Why couldn't the Torah have said that just like the obligation of matzah is only Seder night, the prohibition of Chametz is only Seder night, and then afterwards Chametz is permitted? I think the answer is that matzah celebrates our defining moment as a nation, and the prohibition of chametz is a time when we process that moment. Seder night is the night that we relive and celebrate our freedom, and during the next 7 days, we reflect upon the dangers of that freedom. What are the dangers of freedom? When we speak of freedom, is it simply freedom from constraints or freedom to do what we want? When God freed us from Egypt, was it simply an act of benevolence to assist a vulnerable group from the hands of mighty oppressors, that we were no longer slaves? Were we equipped to utilize this freedom morally and productively? Yes, we can have the passion and the energy of the matzah, but how will we manage or potentially mismanage our freedom? How do we mismanage freedom? If freedom is all about my freedom and my rights, that I can do whatever I desire, then freedom is all about Sa'or Shebe'isa, my desires and my base instincts. And once it's all about my desires, then ultimately it's all about me, the Sa'or Shebe'isa, the arrogance. And once it's all about me and I think I can do anything, I become like the culture of Egypt, the most advanced civilization in the world. And I'm so concerned with my own freedom and my own rights, and I come to regard my own success as a product of my human superiority, that I trample on the rights of other nations and possibly even enslave an entire nation. Additionally, since I'm only interested in serving my own needs, I have my own gods, my avodah zarah, and I try to manipulate the divine to serve my own purposes rather than submitting to a higher power. Chametz warns us for an entire week about the dangers of freedom, of creating a society that celebrates the rights of individuals. On the surface, we think it's wonderful, but it's actually chametz. It's actually very dangerous, and this freedom can ultimately lead to anarchy, idolatry, and even tyranny. Pesach teaches us to take the passion of matzah and then take a deep breath and don't move forward until we fully understand the dangers of freedom. The prohibition of chametz tells us that our survival as a nation, yes, a free nation in a land, is predicated on our commitment to a vision without chametz, one that leaves Egypt behind, one that leaves more than a geographical location, but one that leaves behind values and ideology that are the antithesis of a successful free country. We must leave behind the values of chametz. But the truth is that we need to refine this analysis. Because if indeed chametz is so bad, because it symbolizes the Sa'or Shebe'isa, which is so bad, because it symbolizes our Yetzer Hara and Gaiva or pride, which is so bad, then why isn't chametz forbidden all year long? And do you know what the answer to this question is? Because chametz really isn't so bad. After all, the Midrash tells us, in the Midrash Tanchuma, Parshas Tazria, Siman Hey, that the Roman governor, Tunis Rufus, asked Rabbi Akiva, whose deeds are greater, God's or man's? And Rabbi Akiva responded that man's deeds are greater, and he qualified this statement by referring to those creations of which man is capable. And he explained by bringing some grains of wheat and some bread, and pointing out that the grains of wheat are God's handiwork, whereas bread is the handiwork of man. There's a lot to unpack in this midrash, but the clear import is that baking bread is something positive, that we manipulate the raw materials that God provides for us in this world to produce great creations like bread. Bread is very significant in our religious lives. We fulfill the mitzvah of having Shabbos and Yom Tov meals specifically with a bread meal. And the truth is that maybe even the Yetzer Hara isn't so bad. And maybe pride sometimes isn't so bad either. The Midrash in Bereishis Rabbah, Parsha Tess, Siman Zion, tells us that the word in the Torah of creation, or the phrase of Vihine Tov Ma'od, is a Yetzirah. This refers to the evil inclination. And why is that? Gemara asks, what does that mean? How can the Yetzer Hara be good? And the Midrash says, Ilule Yetzer Hara, without the Yetzer Hara, without drive, without desire, lo bar adam bayis, a person would not build a house. Velo nasa isha, a person wouldn't get married. Velo holid, wouldn't have children. Velo nasa venatan, he wouldn't engage in business and excelling in all work, in doing work and contributing and creating new things in the world, new technological innovations. We need the Yetzer Hara. Our Yetzer Hara, our human desire, is a necessary value in this world. And is it really true that we must always be so humble? You know, the story goes that the chief rabbi of the Shul in Yom Kippur is beating his chest and crying, tears running down his cheeks. I'm nothing, Hashem. I'm nothing. I'm absolutely nothing. Next to him, the gevir of the synagogue, a wealthy banker, kneels down and hits himself in the chest and yells, I'm nothing. Hashem, forgive me for thinking I'm something. I'm not. I'm nothing. Whereupon Shlomo, a poor man who sweeps the Shul floor after the tefillos, after the services, and he hauls trash. He gets down on his knees and he yells, I'm nothing, I'm nothing. And the rabbi observes his elbows, the gvir, and he whispers, look who thinks he's nothing. Do we always have to think that we're nothing? Chazal teach us that there's even value to having some amount of gaiva or pride in ourselves and in our achievements. That's what our rabbis teach us. You know, there's a 15th century sefer, Musar sefer, called Orchot Tzadikim. And it states that if we're so humble that we neglect our body, then that's wrong. There is a value of geus haguf shehi tova, taking care of ourselves. Additionally, it writes in Sefer Orchos Tzadikim that also gaiva babalos hachochma hi mishubachas, that pride in our wisdom is also valuable. To be proud of our wisdom and our understanding, it's also positive. Pride is not necessarily a bad quality. It is the expression of the inner value of a productive person, a feeling for the infinite potential lurking in our soul. What could be bad with that? I would even argue that having an advanced technological society like Egypt, like ancient Egypt, is something that we cherish in today's world. I think most of us value Israel as being the startup nation. We hold that description of our beloved Jewish state as a point of pride. So if bread is not always bad, and desire is not always bad, and pride is not always bad, and in fact, we are permitted to eat bread for the entire year except for a week, why then are we not permitted to eat bread specifically during Pesach? My Rebbe Rav Vonzweig once referred to chametz as unfettered growth. No boundaries, no restrictions. In a certain sense, chametz represents unlimited feeling to do what I want when I want it. But in order to use it properly, we need the Torah to help guide us how to use our freedom. But until we get the Torah, we cannot have chametz because we do not know how to use that freedom. Rav Ezra Bick from Yeshivat Har Etzion wrote the following. The food of free men who have not yet learned, who have not yet chosen to serve God, to serve higher ideals, to use their freedom to rise above servitude, not merely escape it, is matzah. It would be dangerous, catastrophic for them to taste the intoxicating flavor of leavening bread, the fruits of a process that multiplies itself in the dark, growing wildly unchecked raw power and potential. Indeed, chametz on Pesach is not merely a prohibited food. You have to put it out of your mind completely. It does not even exist. For these days, any sign of unsupervised growth must be burnt before the wild weeds take over the fallow earth. Only once we receive the Torah on Shavuos do we offer a sacrifice of two loaves of bread, which is chametz. And the reason is that the Torah believes in a different type of freedom than what we would normally understand. We think freedom or liberty means free from coercion. But this is what Yuval Levin, an American political analyst, explains. He explains in an article in October of 2014 that real liberty or real freedom is the freedom to do not what we want to do, but what we ought to do, moral freedom. He calls this the long way to freedom as opposed to the short way to freedom. That is because the short way to freedom only requires freedom from coercion. But the long way to freedom, to real freedom, what we ought to do, requires moral preparation. What does this preparation entail? The prohibition of chametz can guide us in this regard, because the prohibition of chametz teaches us two key values that guide us how to use our freedom from coercion properly, even before the Torah was given. Unlimited freedom can lead to unhealthy notions of what we want and who we are. To fight unhealthy notions of what we want, we need discipline. This value counteracts the danger of Yetzer Hara. Edmund Burke, a Christian humanist from the 18th century, argues that liberty is not just the unbridled pursuit of passion. Rather, it is inner restraint that gives us liberty. if we are bound to our passion, do we have true freedom? Burke writes that the liberty he seeks is social freedom, which is secured by the equality of restraint. A constitution ensures social restraint or justice, but the underlying value is discipline, restraining our passions. No chametz, no yetzer hara. It's all about discipline. We all know the famous marshmallow test. When children were presented with the choice of either receiving one marshmallow now or waiting 15 minutes and receive two different marshmallows. Those children who patiently waited for the second marshmallow went on to have more successful marriages, careers, and lives in general. Discipline and restraint, rejecting the source Sheva Isa, is the key to successful freedom. But we also must fight unhealthy notions of who we are, and to do that, we need humility. Not to the point where we feel that we are nothing, but we must balance self-esteem with humility. The great Hasidic leader Rav Simcha Bunim of Pesischa taught that everyone must have two pockets, with a note in each pocket. In one pocket, there should be a piece of paper saying, Anochi Afar Ve'efer, I am only dust and ashes. In another pocket, there should be a piece of paper saying, Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam, that the world was created for my sake, for a society. What this balance means, what this balance of humility and self-esteem means in practice, is that we must be open to the fact that we may not own the entire truth. There are shivim parim la Torah. There really are. And yes, there are many bright people who think differently than you, and they may have a point, shocking as it may seem. And politically, I know who to vote for. The next presidential election is an easy choice for Orthodox Jews. And of course, 50% of us are definitely correct, and 50% of us are definitely wrong. Or maybe we need more humility, even when we are absolutely certain that we are correct. Look where Israel was on October 6th. Israel, the free country on the brink of civil war, with so much divisiveness and hatred. Why was there no unity? There was no unity because there was no humility, no consideration of the possibility that I might be wrong. This is where freedom leads to. When Israel is united, we will win. When we are not united, our enemies take advantage of our weakness. But unity comes from a sense of humility, that there is another perspective, that I do not necessarily own the whole truth. And that is what our society needs. That is what Israel needs, because there are painful questions about Prime Minister Netanyahu. There are painful questions about the Haredim. There are painful questions about the religious secular divide. There are painful questions on how far we are willing to go to bring back our hostages. But there must be unity for us to defeat Hamas and to stop Iran, whatever decision Israel takes. And that unity can only come if we reject the Sa'or Sheva Isa, if we reject arrogance and embrace the Midah of humility. When we embrace these two characteristics of no chametz, of managing what we want and who we are, then we emerge with true freedom. The type of freedom which Rabbi Sacks speaks about, and he writes the following. To be free, to truly be free, we must understand what it means to not be free. Yet freedom itself has different dimensions, a point reflected in the two Hebrew words used to describe it, chofesh and chirut. Chofesh is freedom from, chirut is freedom to. Chofesh is what a slave acquires when released from slavery. He or she is free from being subject to someone else's will. But this kind of liberty is not enough to create a free society. A world in which everyone is free to do what they like begins in anarchy and ends in tyranny. That is why chofesh is only the beginning of freedom, not its ultimate destination. Chirut is collective freedom, a society in which my freedom respects yours. A free society is always a moral achievement. It rests on self-restraint and regard for others. The ultimate aim of Torah is to fashion a society on the foundations of justice and compassion, both of which depend on recognizing the sovereignty of God and the integrity of creation. Thus, we say next year, may we all be B'nai Chorin, invoking Chirut, not Chofesh. It means, may we be free in a way that honors the freedom of all. The Pesach story, writes Rabbi Sacks, more than any other, remains the inexhaustible source of inspiration to all those who long for freedom. It taught that right was sovereign over might, that freedom and justice must belong to all, not some, that under God all human beings are equal, and that over all earthly power, the King of Kings, who hears the cry of the oppressed and who intervenes in history to liberate slaves. It took many centuries for this vision to become the shared property of liberal democracies of the West and beyond, and there is no guarantee that it will remain so. Freedom is a moral achievement, and without a constant effort of education, it atrophies and must be fought for again. Nowhere more than on Pesach, though, do we see how the story of one people can become the inspiration of many, how loyal to its faith across the centuries, the Jewish people become the guardians of a vision through which, ultimately, all the peoples of the earth will be blessed. According to Rabbi Sacks, self-restraint and regard for others, discipline and humility is the type of freedom that we strive for. We can be a startup nation like biblical Egypt, but not a tyrannical, idolatrous regime like ancient Egypt. As long as we reject chametz, as long as we live a life of discipline and humility. The Seder of 2024 stands out from all others. We find ourselves in a time of crisis, as does the broader Jewish community. As we gather on Monday night to celebrate freedom, we are starkly aware that many of our fellow Jews cannot join us in this celebration because they are held captive. It is difficult for us to constantly bear in mind the plight of the hostages, our courageous soldiers, and our beloved brothers and sisters who have been displaced from their homes in Israel for over 6 months now. It feels overwhelming. Some of us may feel that we've already given all that we can in terms of charitable giving. We might even feel the urge to disengage, to move on with our lives. But we must resist these thoughts. On the night of the Seder, as we celebrate our freedom, we must also keenly feel the pain of those who are still in captivity, who have yet to experience liberation. One way to keep this at the forefront of our minds is by observing the tradition of no chametz. It's not about our personal desires or comfort. It's about recognizing that with freedom comes the responsibility to continue feeling their pain, to keep giving charity, to advocate for policy changes, and to show our ongoing support for our brothers and sisters in Israel, even after 6 months have passed. This is the essence of the freedom of no chametz that we need to embrace now. As we gather for our Seder, my hope and prayer are that we are inspired by the matzah to become passionate, committed Jews moving forward. Let us use this holiday in the 7 weeks leading up to Shavuos to focus on two essential values, discipline and humility. While you all already bring me so much nachas, if you wish to bring me even more nachas, here is how you can do it. Commit to a SMART goal of religious discipline over the next 7 weeks leading up to Shavuos. It's not a long time, just 7 weeks. Choose something new to commit to every day or every week during this period. It could involve prayer, attending minyan, learning something new, participating in a Torah study session, refraining from speaking negatively about others, or visiting a sick person regularly. Choose something that requires discipline and stick to it. Furthermore, commit to a SMART goal of humility over the next 7 weeks leading up to Shavuos. Seek out opportunities to listen to others' perspectives without interrupting or dominating the conversation. Practice humility by genuinely considering their viewpoints and acknowledging their contributions before expressing your own thoughts. Keep track of your progress by noting instances where you successfully demonstrate humility in conversations, aiming for at least 3 meaningful interactions per week. It would bring me great nachas to hear from you around Shavuos about your journey towards developing discipline and or humility over the next 7 weeks. Please consider this request. Let us all celebrate with our families joyfully, while also praying for those in Gaza who are unable to be with their loved ones and for peace in Israel. Let us commit ourselves to managing our freedom in a way that benefits us and those around us. And in the schus of our efforts, may HaKadosh Baruch Hu, may God answer our heartfelt tefillot and bring us ever so closer to the light of redemption in our days.